Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
That was something that I really had to learn, because no one was gonna, people can't believe in you for you. And as much as anyone might try, it won't work as long as you don't believe in yourself.
Welcome to The Power Hour, the weekly podcast that will motivate you to pursue your passion and to achieve success. I'm Adrienne Herbert, international speaker, fitness coach, Adidas global ambassador and entrepreneur. Each week, I'll be talking to today's leading coaches, creatives, change makers and innovators to find out their daily habits, morning routines and rules to live by. The Power Hour is all about taking just 1 hour each day to help you improve your life and unlock your full potential. Whether you want to build a business, write a book, run a marathon, or maybe you're just looking for a spark of inspiration, the Power Hour is going to help you get there faster. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today's guest is a singer-songwriter from South East London who literally grew up surrounded by music in a Deptford nightclub. Her beautiful, bold lyrics about race, class, gender and sexuality provoke thought and often spark debate. Fans of her music include former President of the United States, Barack Obama, and she was recently awarded the Jazz FM Awards 2019 Soul Act of the Year. And you may have spotted her in her recent Nike campaign. Welcome to the studio, Poppy Ajuda.
Hi, you should do my PR.
Everyone knows that.
What a great bio.
Yeah, everyone always loves the intro. They're yeah, like, thanks. It's like you don't often get to hear all of your stuff.
In like a kind of succinct, always moving to the next thing.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you so much for coming in today. I was so looking forward to having you here in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
And know how busy you are right now. So I guess I don't even know where to start with you, Poppy, but I guess it'd be great if you could take us back. I know that you grew up, as I said, surrounded by music. Is it actually true that you grew up in a nightclub? And can you tell us how you first got started in the music industry?
Everybody latches onto this. For me, it felt really normal. But then when I hear other people's childhoods, it's really not that normal. In some respects, that's true. I lived between my mum and my dad's house, and my dad owned a nightclub. So when I stayed with my dad, I would be upstairs, and like when I'd go to bed, the bed would like shake from the bass. Yeah, it would like keep me up at night. That was just part of my life. It didn't ever feel weird. I'd come downstairs in the middle of the night and there'd be like a full rave going on, and someone would lift me up and be like, David, your daughter's come downstairs, put her to bed. And so I was really used to, as a child, one, hearing lots of different types of music, but also being around a lot of people. And I think that helped with my energy as a person. I'm very like easygoing, and I love people, and I find it quite hard to be alone, and I think that's probably because I'm used to being around people a lot. So I think it probably formed who I am quite a lot.
Yeah. And then how did you go from that, so from sneaking down into the club to discovering, I guess, your voice, your sound, and yes, getting started yourself?
I think it was something that I always wanted to do, and I probably didn't realize that surrounding was part of that, because I was always singing and I knew the words to almost all the songs that ever existed at that time. Even now I can sing along to like any Lovers Rock, Roots Reggae tune and not even know what it is, just because when I was a child. And so I think that played a big part in it. But then also I loved strong female vocalists, and I think I didn't really think about it that way as a child, but actually, when I look back, people like Pink or Avril Lavigne or even Britney, Pussycat Dolls were a favourite also, which I don't know how I was allowed to listen to. But anyway, I guess what felt like women who were very autonomous and independent and saying what they wanted and were very loud. And because I think that was an energy that I always had as a young woman. I was always very kind of, I was always too loud. I always talked too much. I was kind of always a bit too disruptive.
I didn't like doing what other people told me to do. And I think so I always kind of identified with those female artists. And I was always singing and I had a lot to say, and I wrote a lot of poetry because of that. And it was my way, I guess every child finds a different way of working out how to express themselves or how to understand their world. And for me, writing poetry and singing was that. And so I started teaching myself guitar just from online on that site called Tabs.
How old were you then?
I was like, well, I was singing since forever. I'd like run out of the shower with like a song in my head, had to write it down on like a piece of kitchen roll. I have so many memories of that. But I think I've got to a point where I needed a way to make them into songs and I didn't know how to. And my sisters were in a band and they had these like fake learning guitars. And so I used to steal them and try and like learn to play guitar on those. And I cried all year for a guitar and I got one. And then that was probably when I was about 13.
Okay.
Yeah. And I started, and I would sing in this really weird voice because I didn't want anyone to like know what I was singing about.
Right.
And I had to really unlearn that like habit because it was really bad for my voice. But it was kind of, that was how I started. And I'd play at school every lunchtime. I'd be in the music room. It was just the thing that felt most important to me and was always where my focus was. And that thing that ran through my whole life. I think as a woman, as a young woman, you lose a lot of confidence in your teen years. And that's probably when I stopped thinking that I could be those things that I really wanted to be or that I was really passionate about. And then I got my flow back and I got back into it, I think, after college.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. I think a lot of people can probably relate because I think almost when you're young, maybe you just kind of do everything, you know what I mean? You're like, yeah, I want to do this, I can do that. And you kind of, I used to anyway, I was nodding along to what you said about, you know, being loud and like talk too much. I said that recently, that all my school teachers, that every report said, Adrienne has potential, but she talks too much. And now I'm like, I got a podcast. I'm like, it's come to good use. But I think, you know, that thing of changing and you can be everything, you can do every club, you can do, you know, guitar, you go to gymnastics, you can sweat, you can do everything. And I think, as you say, when you get a little bit older and a bit more maybe self-aware, and it's almost like, is this a hobby or is this something that you're going to pursue and be serious? And it almost changes. And I think, yeah, a lot often that's the time when you become inhibited and you stop doing those things, which is a shame. But it's great, I guess, that you then, came back to it.
Yeah, and I guess it's at that time where you learn who you are through how other people perceive you. And I think as a woman, that's very coded, and we learn a lot of our ways of being through who we think we have to be or who we think we should be. And that often takes up a lot of energy. Mm. And actually, how do you have time to do all of these million things that you want to do if you're worried about the way this person's talking to you, or if you should like boys and how you should like them and why that person doesn't like you that way or wants you to look this way or whatever? It's crazy. You know, when you were young and people used to say to you like, oh, this isn't the most important thing. Like, when you get older, you're not going to care about any of that stuff.
Mm.
That was to do with like friendships and relationships and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, yeah, but it's so important.
Yeah. And it really undermines actually the emotion that you're feeling at that time. It's kind of saying to you that your feelings aren't valid. It's like you're feeling this intense emotion, but it's like those things, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But also the idea that actually they won't, like, you'll actually be thinking about other things. Like, who cares if that boy doesn't like, it feels ridiculous now.
Yeah.
But when you're a kid, it's like your whole,
everything.
I think it depends what type of person you are. I am and a very emotional and very sensitive person. So the way that people interact with me really affects me. So I think I would always care so much about what other people thought, or even the little things that people would say to me. And equally, I think the little things that were really good would really spur me on. So there's like a few comments I probably got when I was growing up, and I still remember them, of people telling me that I could be a singer. Yeah. I could do it. And I still remember, like, really? You think it's not just me that thinks that?
Yeah.
And those kind of positive confirmations of your ability are so important when you're young, because we're so impressionable.
True. Yeah, so important. I often say that, you know, words have power, and it can be one small thing that someone says to you, good or bad, and it stays. You know, like, we've all got that thing that we remember, like, from 10 years ago where you're like, oh,
it's crazy.
Whether it's about someone can say something about your ears or about something, it's one thing.
It will be your thing that you always.
Yeah, 20 years later, you're still like, oh, that person said. You know, it's and equally the other way around, as you said, when someone gives you that word of encouragement, maybe that you need at that time, they could just be passing like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Mm. But to you, you're like, yes. Like,
I think that's why it's so important to, especially with women, I'm someone who I love to like, give compliments. I think it's really important to like, if you're thinking something and you think something's really cool or whatever, like tell that person because it's such a boost. Mm. And we do need it because a lot of the world tells us otherwise or makes us second guess ourselves or doubt ourselves. So I feel like that's like a small thing that you can do for other women around you. Mm. I do it with men as well. If there's something that I think is productive about their personality that maybe they wouldn't see as valuable, then to praise them on it, which would mean that they might do it more. And actually, it's not something that is something that's toxic or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I, you know, I have read your interviews where you've talked before about confidence, and it did surprise me, you know. And you said that, you know, you really struggled with confidence a lot, especially around, you know, your music. And I guess because you're a songwriter as well, I sometimes think that's different, maybe to singing other people's work. So I guess, what changed? How did you overcome that?
I was thinking about these kind of things before, and it's funny because I'm really, as a person, I'm very outgoing, I'm very confident, I'm not someone who's shy, an extrovert, I guess you'd say. But I really did struggle when I was younger with that feeling of not being good enough or not being sure, and it really inhibited me from doing a lot of things. And I think what I realised is that no one else is going to do it for me but me. And so actually the most important thing I can do is believe in myself. And as long as I do believe in myself, I can really do anything. Because if you don't even think that it's possible, then you haven't even began to try, because it's not something that exists yet. Mm. So as long as you think something's possible, then anything can be achieved. And that was something that I really had to learn, because no one was gonna, people can't believe in you for you. And as much as anyone might try, it won't work as long as you don't believe in yourself. So that really changes everything. I think it's funny because, well, I think it's a mixture of things. I think it's believing in yourself and also working really hard at your craft so that you're actually really good at it.
Yeah.
Because part of the reason you might not believe in yourself is because you're not there yet. And because you know that you have things that aren't perfect or aren't quite right, or you could be better. So if you really believe you can do it, you're really going to push yourself to get to that. I'm sure, you know, as someone who is in sports, it's like there's so much about pushing yourself to a limit, which I think is really hard for a lot of people, is to actually get to that point that's on the other side.
Yeah.
And
I love that you said that, though. Do like the work and the craft, because I think often, as you said, it gives yourself proof. So thinking about, relating it to running, it's that you give yourself the proof. Every time you do it, you give in. So for example, in a moment of low confidence, but maybe you've got a race or something and you're like, actually, if you know you haven't trained, you know, you've missed training sessions, you've missed this, you know, you're setting yourself up for failure. But when you know, you're like, I have done the work.
Yeah, it's like doing an essay.
Yeah.
An exam does not have to be scary. And I used to have this with it because I'm dyslexic and dyspraxic. So exams used to be the most scary thing for me ever. When I was a kid, they had to take me out of the class because I would freak out. And I remember in my final year of uni, in my third year, I remember sitting down and being like, I'm so excited to write this paper because there is nothing they can ask me that I don't know.
Yeah.
And I had, and it was like, it's a 3-hour exam and you have to write for 3 hours. And it was so fun. Literally everything. Yeah, I was ready. And I think it's the same with anything. And don't be someone who hasn't tried to have a craft. It's so important and it never goes away. Mm. If you learn to do something really well, that skill never goes away. And sometimes when we're young, we feel like many other things are more important, like our image or our followers or whatever it is, our personalities. But actually, when it comes down to it, you can get that at any point, but no one can take away from you your ability to be amazing at what you want to do. Mm. And so
it's just like confidence and skill, and you're kind of good to go. You can achieve anything.
Yeah, they go hand in hand for
sure. Yeah, for sure.
Amazing. And I mentioned at the start that your lyrics often provoke, you know, thought and sometimes debate maybe about some really, really important topics. Mm. And it seems that your fans really connect with you because of it. So what's that process like? So, you know, when it comes to songwriting, do you write with a specific person in mind? Who do you want to hear your message? What's that process like?
I think when I started, I didn't have someone specific in mind apart from myself, and writing is a big therapy for me. If I can't write, then I'm going to fall apart probably, because I have to be able to make sense of what I'm feeling, and writing is the way to get that out. And if I can't write about it, then I don't really understand it, if you know what I mean. It's mm-hmm. like, you know when someone teaches you something and then you have to write it in your own words, yeah. and you're like, oh, I wasn't listening at all. I don't know how to write it in my own words. It's kind of like that. And so when I first started, I was just, in terms of like She's a Psalm or Tepid Soul, I was working out who I was as a woman, and that She was a Psalm, I was working out that I had a voice and I could use it. And I was quite angry at that time because I was realizing all these things, things I already knew, but I was reading a lot about feminism and I was studying it, and I was upset about how much we give ourselves away to other people. Mm. And so it was my anger at myself, but also my realization that I didn't have to do that. And then a kind of call out to other women to realize that too, if they hadn't already. And I think that was the same with Tepid Soul. It was about my heritage as a mixed race woman and the kind of hypersexualization that we go through, especially from a really young age. For me, it was like 13, 14. Mm. Until I performed those songs live, I didn't realize the effect I was having on other people. And I didn't, because I think also there's a lot of identity in different cultures, but in being mixed race, there isn't really an identity at all, because we're not from anywhere really looking like when people look at us, they don't mm-hmm. see us as from anywhere. And they often project their idea of where they want you to be from
yeah.
in relation to, with a lot of women, hypersexualization. And so you kind of often feel like you're in this space, but you don't really have anyone else to talk. I don't feel like mixed race people talk to anyone else about it.
Yeah.
And so until I performed, I didn't realise, but there were mixed race people who would put their hands up or whatever, or shout or say to me afterwards that I really felt what you were saying. And I was like, wow, I didn't even think about all the other people. And so I think as that happened, I really learned how important it was to be that for other people and to help them feel that unity and that idea that, because that's what music does for a lot of us, is that you feel like you're not alone. Yeah. And even if it is just a love song, it's like if you're going through a heartbreak, you feel like someone else has gone through that too, and that means that you'll get through it. Mm. And I think it's the same with race, gender, sexuality, politics. It's that feeling that you're not alone in this journey, and that there's something that we can do, and there are people that are, there is hope that we're doing something. And yeah. and I really felt that, especially with touring and that kind of thing,
yeah.
that I had to do this more for other people as well. So then my more recent songs have been based around that more, yeah. have been understanding certain topics like toxic masculinity and writing a song specifically through my experience, but about that in a way that men and women could gain something from listening to it. And that's become more of a big part of the way that I write songs now.
Yeah, well, you can tell for sure. And it doesn't surprise me, actually, listening to you talk, that people would have that reaction and that they would feel that, you know, yes, that speaks to me,
because yeah.
you know, I'm nodding along to what you say. And you know, obviously I'm a mixed race woman myself, and a lot of the things, you know, when you said you were kind of discovering things and then you felt angry, it's like you kind of, I don't know, myself anyway, my experience was for so long I didn't even know these things. And then when you learn them, you can't unlearn them, and you can't, you know, kind of, I guess, explore how that has affected yourself. And I think, you know, even though your experience is so unique, everyone's is unique.
Mm.
As you said, when other people were telling you, like, that's my experience too. So, yeah, they're not alone. But it's funny because at the time you think, it's just me.
Well, we learn our world as it is until anyone tells us different. And that's why, for me, like, reading is so important, and learning and reading people who have had so much experience and like life ahead of them is so important to understand the world that we live in a way that isn't just what is normative or what we're told to understand, because we all know that what we learn in school isn't the picture of everything and for everyone. And I just want to be a part of that, of people learning another way of thinking about the world that isn't just boys wear blue and girls wear pink and, you know.
But the timing, I think, is, you know, the timing right now, it's like, it's just a different world, and the pace that the world's changing. And
it's, you know, scary, the pace.
Yeah, and the conversations, you know, the fact that now you can just read, you can find the article, you can find the book, you can listen to the podcast. It's kind of, it's there if you want it.
So much access.
So much access, yeah. You know, I think it's so different, and I hope it's going to be so different for, you know, my son's generation.
It's really crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really
how
crazy.
Different it will be. Yeah,
yeah. So, what advice would you give to somebody who, I guess, maybe is trying to make it in the creative industry, maybe in music or maybe not? And you know, they look at you and they see your success and they think maybe they're at the start of their journey or they've been going for a while but they're not getting, you know what I mean, where they want to be. What would your advice be to them?
If you really think that you have something special and you have something to offer the world, then don't let anyone stop you. And I think don't let fear stop you, or fear of doing it wrong or being embarrassed, because it's really important to do it wrong and be embarrassed, because how can you learn to be better? Anyone successful has had a million things that have gone wrong. And it's, for me, it's kind of how you choose to deal with that. You know, it's like, what do you do with those things that have gone wrong? Do you let them defeat you, or do you learn from them? And so I think my advice for anyone who is trying to make something of themselves in the creative industry is, one, it's creative, so no one can tell you if you're doing your own thing, no one can tell you that you won't be needed or useful in this world. You know what I mean? You can, if it's organic and it's pure and it's your story, then you can make something of yourself. There's always space. So don't, because often there will be people that will tell you that you're not good enough, or you won't make it, or they don't have the belief in your dream that you need to have, because no one can see it but you. Until it's realized, no one can see it. So you have to have a really clear vision of what it is you want. Write lists. This is the best thing that I do, is actually, instead of just being like, I want this thing, make a plan for how you'll get it.
Yeah.
Be tactical, be intentional and purposeful with your actions, with everything that you do. Mm. Have that goal in your mind, and you'll find your way to it subconsciously. If you live and breathe it, that will happen. And I think what you said about the fast pace, it is a fast paced world, and it's really hard. And we do have to, these days, you have to give your 100%. Otherwise, you can't do it, because everybody's running at a million miles an hour. And that's the one kind of negative thing about the way that our society is going, is that fast pace that is sometimes hard to keep up with.
Yeah.
So you really have to, like, have your head screwed on and believe in what you do, and not kind of get distracted by the world around you, by the people saying things, by people doing other things. Don't let it stray you from what you see yourself doing or being.
Yeah, I think that pace that you're describing, although it has its downsides, upsides, I think that is often what frustrates people, because they think that they should have it quicker, they should have done it quicker, they should
everyone
be there already.
Feels like that.
Yeah, and I think for myself, probably included, you know, I'm not exempt from that. I think often people think about something, maybe a goal, maybe where they should be or whatever, and it's like, the pace, I think that's the problem. It's that, you know, when people say, well, I've been doing this, Adrienne, I've been doing this for this long, or maybe they've had this many rejections, or maybe it's been like a long time, you know, like, not when people say to me, I've been doing this for 6 months and I haven't got it. It's like 8 years, you know?
Yeah.
You've been
8 years is the time,
years.
I think.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, I was in a panel talk once, and the audience member, she asked everyone on the panel how long they'd been doing things for. And apparently she had some algorithm that meant that around 8 years is the time that it takes to actually, like, do something well and succeed and start becoming successful.
Wow.
And sometimes we don't realize it takes that long.
Mm. Well, that's the like I was saying, the speed. It's like the instant gratification, the quickness. You know, something like 8 years, I think I understand what she's talking about. It's like the mastery of something.
Mm.
And actually, if you've been doing something for 5 years and you're not getting the results you want, of course you're going to feel disheartened.
Yeah.
You're going to feel discouraged. You're going to think, you know what, maybe they're right. I'm not that good. I need to just give it up. But I think how many people probably give up at year five, year six, year seven, and they don't, if they'd have carried on, maybe it could have been.
Yeah. And I think it's that idea that we hold on to these landmark times, and actually everyone's different. We all have different opportunities. The world is not equal. Unless you have rich parents and loads of money, or famous parents, you're probably not gonna do it in a blink of an eye. Do you know what I mean? Everybody has
different skill sets. Everybody, it doesn't matter that it's hard because under capitalism, that idea of like the trickle down effect, you can make it if you try. It's kind of a double-edged sword because it is a lot harder if you haven't had all the opportunities. But you can still do it. You just have to work harder.
Yeah,
you have to work harder than other people. You have to accept that you're not going to have the same opportunities. You have to try and get those extra lessons, try and meet those people, be in the right places. The world isn't fair.
Yeah.
And those people that do succeed are people that work to the absolute limit until they get exactly what it is they want. And I think it's just being sure of the thing that you want. You know, I think sometimes it's hard when you fray away from that thing that you want and make sure that it actually means something to you, because if it doesn't mean something to you, then it has to be your passion. It has to be your life passion, because otherwise you won't enjoy getting there either.
Yeah, and you're so right about the life injustice. I read this thing once. It said, your circumstance is not the reason that you're not succeeding. Your circumstance is just the parameters in which you must succeed.
Yeah.
And I was like, of course.
Did you read that?
I think, you know what? I don't know. I think it might have been a Cal Newport. I'm going to find out. But I just remember thinking it was so clear to me. It's like, yeah, this argument between, well, she's had a head start, or this person that, or the money, or the circumstance, or the privilege. Yes, life is not fair. We're not all starting at the start line.
And I think it's naive for us to be like, oh, you can just get it if you try. And it's like, that's not helpful saying to someone just that, because it's not about that. You have to realise that throughout your life, you're going to experience people that have more than you, or have it better than you, or have it easier than you. And you have to not let that stop you. It's not like that idea of like relative deprivation, the idea that you will see someone else and be like, oh, why don't I have what they have? It's like, that is an unhelpful thought.
Yeah.
If you want what they have, don't think about it in that way. Think about how you will get to where you want to get to outside of what everyone else has. And I think it's really hard with online platforms for that reason, because we're so much more these days able to see what everybody has, or whatever everybody might have or pretends they have, and so that gives us that feeling of we're deprived from all these things that we should have, and actually it's unimportant. It's really unimportant to your development.
Yeah, and the flip side of that coin is it assigns blame. So when you're saying then, you know, this idea that if you want it, you can work for it, you can have it. The flip side to that message is, if you want it and you haven't got it, it's like, well, whose fault? It's like, you haven't done the work. It's like assigns blame. I think that's also, can be unhelpful. But this is amazing. This is very complex, but I'm loving it. But I want to ask you, I mean, I just, you know, just dropped it in the intro that, you know, Barack Obama, he's a fan. But anyone that doesn't know already, at the end of each year, Barack Obama shares a list of his favourite songs, films and books from that year. And at the end of last year, when he shared his list of faves, it included your track with Tom Misch. That's insane. How did you find out, first of all? I want to know who told you. How did you find out, and what was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. And no one told me. I just started being tagged in his post on Obama's Instagram. I was like, this is not real. I literally saw it and I was like, why are all these random people tagging me in this thing? And then I saw like Barack Obama's Instagram and I was like, that must be a fake account, because I was in the studio and I just genuinely, like, you know when your brain just doesn't compute, this is not something that happens in my life. I'm sure in most people's life it doesn't happen. I think Cardi B was also on that list and she was like posting about it like, I can't believe it, two steps closer to the White House, which I don't know if I was quite as close as she is, but it was crazy. It was very surreal. He just posted a picture on his Instagram and with the list, and me and Tom were the only British artists on that list, so it was kind of even more crazy. I was just kind of staring at my phone for a while, just like...
Did you imagine him like singing along in the White House, like dancing to it?
Yeah, I mean, I have done. I'm hoping that still happens. It's exciting.
Yeah.
And it was just... It's one of those weird things that you kind of don't know what to say. It's like, cool. It's like another person like loves my music, which is sick. You just don't expect it to be like the sickest president that's been.
But I'd have been like, right, PR, get to America now. Get me to meet him.
Yeah, that would have been so cool. I mean, I don't know how, because it was like a personal thing that he did.
Yeah.
It's not, I can't call Barack Obama. It wasn't done by like a PR.
DM, slide in the DM.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should have tried. But it was picked up by loads of news channels. I was on Channel 4. I was on Sky News. And I was actually in St. Lucia at the time seeing family. So it was so weird, because I was very removed from that world of press and PR, to then see videos of people's TVs, and I was just like on the TV, but like in the Caribbean with like the palm trees in the background. Yeah, it was very surreal and very cool.
Amazing. Yeah, I think it's incredible. And even, you know, hearing you say it like that, you know, you're so, I guess, just humble, and you're like, yeah, it was crazy. I'm just on TV, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, it is, and it's cool, but it's just like, it's amazing. For me, the most amazing thing is that my music could reach that crazy place.
Yep.
And that also it's received by someone who meant so much for so many people, even just at his election.
Yeah.
I think I was in secondary school when he was elected. And yeah, it was such a monumental moment for, I guess, the West in general. So it felt impactful in that sense.
Yeah.
At least it was someone like, imagine if it was Trump. Can you imagine? I would actually just die.
You're like, yeah. You're,
I'd be like, wow. You need to stop right now. Backtrack and just delete me, please.
Yeah, if you're listening, Trump.
Although I feel like he probably isn't going to like my music, let's face it.
Research. And I saw you perform at Roundhouse in London. I don't know, was that last year, the year before, when you were with Tom?
Year before.
So that was the first time. And then, yeah, and I saw you perform there.
I think that was my first tour.
Really?
Yeah, because I supported him. Yeah, and that was, at the time, that was one of my biggest shows. It was 3,000 people. And I literally was like,
it was incredible. I was like, this voice. Oh my gosh. And you know what? I'm going to be honest right now. This is embarrassing. I felt so old at that gig.
Did you? Oh, yeah. But Tom's audience is very young,
right? So I didn't know. Yeah. I just know his music. I'm like, cool, like, oh, he's in London, I'm gonna go to this gig, cool. And I swear, like, I was there with my husband and we were like babe, when did we get like old? Like, I was literally wearing, like, I don't even know what I was wearing, but I remember looking around and like everyone's wearing like a hoodie and a t-shirt, and I literally was like, oh my gosh, we're actually old. We're those old people at the gig. So yeah, I mean,
well, my mum was there and Tom's dad was there.
Okay.
So they were definitely older than
some
you.
Other parents.
They had like a fight in the audience because Tom's dad stood in front of my mum in the crowd, and my mum was like, excuse me, my daughter's playing. And he was like, excuse me, my son's a headline. And then they made friends. They took a selfie and they sent it to us backstage.
Jokes. As if. I love it. They're getting rowdy. Yeah. So you mentioned, so that was one of your first, but you've done so many performances and tours since then.
Yeah.
Do you have, I guess, any like standout moments of like performances that were your favourites, or like anything that, yeah, I guess, stands out for you?
My headline tour was definitely that one that really stood out. And I think what we were talking about earlier about realising the way that my music connects with people, that was like the first time. Because I really didn't think that anyone was going to turn up. And it was crazy to me that even the first show, I was like, no one's going to come. Like, it's just going to be empty. This is all a joke. It is such imposter syndrome. And I was sitting in the green room and my engineer came in and was like, oh, the support act, because I was like hiding. She's really good. And I was like, oh, cool. He was like, yeah, there's people there. And I was like, don't lie to me. And he was like, yeah, no, it's full. And I was like, that's not even funny. Like, why are you joking? And he was like, literally go outside, probably it's full. And I had no idea. And the tour was like that. And my audience was so amazing. And also so many young men, because obviously my work reads more closely to women, but so many young men who were really, it was so inspiring to meet a whole load of young men who were really interested in being better and realizing their flaws and being self-reflective, which is not something that men are taught to be at all. So that was a really big eye-opener for me, because I was a bit nervous. I write these songs when I'm at home and I'm like, I've got all the attitude, but then you have to sing a song about toxic masculinity to loads of men in a room and you're like, oh God, I don't know what to look. And it was such a surprise, and I realised why I do what I do, because when people came up to me afterwards when I was signing merch and stuff, and I had so many young men and older men just tell me that, oh, that song really connected with them, and they know they have loads of work to do and all of this stuff. And I was like, this is crazy to me.
And so impactful.
Yeah, so impactful. And even just men that you wouldn't expect, very, very masculine reading men. There was a guy who I did a show in Birmingham, and actually the audience was mostly men. And I was really surprised and really scared when I had to sing that song. And they'd come, he'd made all his friends come from Coventry to Birmingham. And they were all like these laddish young boys. And I just was really refreshing, because sometimes you feel like I do get trolling and stuff like that from people who are really intimidated by a woman who knows herself and wants to inspire other women. And so it was really, yeah, I just realised that people do listen and people are interested in being the best versions of themselves and kind of looking into themselves so that we can have better relationships with each other. And that's something that I talk about a lot on my shows, is that men and women, we're always going to exist together, and feminism has to include men. We need men to be feminists, and we need them to make an effort and to try harder and to realise their flaws and talk to each other.
Yeah.
Talk to women and have those, I mean, not all the emotional labour stuff, but to actually, we have to communicate to
engage, be
yeah,
a part of
engage.
It.
And I think that's what I've really found. And that's become my main pursuit, is to create a space where we are starting conversations. And between, probably not at that show, that was a very early show for me and a very big one. And now it's because I remember that show was like, oh my God, 3,000 people. And I did a show at North Sea Jazz Festival, and I'm still shocked every time I go out and there's like 2,000 people, and I'm like, I really didn't think that, I thought it was going to be empty. And I've got all these people here listening, and it's, yeah, it's really nice. And that thing you were saying about confidence, I actually listened to, it came up on my hard drive somewhere, that a performance I did of a show really early, like before the Tom tour. And it was so funny hearing myself on stage, and I literally said, and now I talk between all my songs, and yeah, I talk about the issues, and we talk about toxic masculinity, and I talk to the audience about whether they're feminists, and we actually like, we connect, and lots of people love that about my shows. And it's so funny because I listened to an audio recording, and I was like, I'd love to talk to you guys, but I'm really awkward, so I'm just going to sing the song. And I can't imagine being like that now.
And it's part of it.
Yeah, it's part of it. It's part of growing. And we have to have those moments where we like cringe at ourselves, like, I can't believe I was that way. Because how do we develop and grow and become more confident? And I can't even imagine myself being that way now. But I had to do those first shows and be really awkward. And
yeah, that's how you grow in anything, right? I think that's often the thing, which I think, because now everything that's digital exists, it's harder, because people can go back and watch the first video or listen to the first episode or whatever.
And so we're expected to be perfect.
Yeah, and we put down ourselves. It's like, oh, maybe delete the first ones, because then... And it's like, no, let them be there, because that was part of it. And touring is obviously, you know, really hard work, you know, physically, I guess, you know, especially your voice, you know, it's very demanding, and you're in demand, you know, you're busy. So like, how do you prioritize what you say yes to, what you do, your schedule, and how do you prioritize taking care of yourself and taking care of your voice?
Yeah, it's really important. I think it's kind of the difference between being amateur and being professional, is because as you get more busy, and especially with something that is an instrument that is not external it's not external to your body. Because if you're like a saxophone player, you can kind of be a bit more free. Whereas as a singer, if I talk too much, or I go out partying, or I drink too much, or I try and smoke, I don't smoke, but if I did, it would ruin my voice. Mm-hmm. And so I have to really be thoughtful about, and also even just fitness and what I eat. And if I get acid reflux because I've had too many teas in a day or too many coffee, it's ridiculous, the things that we have to think about. But when you're using something every day, I'm sure you have the same thing with your muscles. It's the same, like literally now I have speech therapy and a vocal coach, and they literally tell me you have to use your voice as if you're an athlete. Like, you have to get throat massages when you've had a tour and you've been singing every day, because those are muscles that you're using and that you're tiring out. And if you don't take it seriously, the thing is, you kind of with singing, you don't really take it seriously, because part of it is your gift that you can just do it. But actually, if you want to be really good and you want to be sustainable, you have to warm up and warm down.
Yeah, it's craft.
Yeah, and after shows, I can't
go out, which is really annoying.
Yeah,
if you're out and you're in all these different cities every night. And yeah, the same thing with traveling is super tiring, being in like tour buses.
So do you have any kind of, I guess, like, not rules, but like, do you have any kind of non-negotiables that you try to put in place to kind of think, okay, this is what I need physically and also mentally when you're giving, you know what I mean, to people, to kind of like self-preserve?
Yeah, that's definitely true. On a tour, it's very regimented because you go to a lot of places in a short amount of time. So it's kind of, you're resting when you're traveling. When I get to a venue, I will steam. I probably won't really talk to anyone. I'll do my vocal warm-ups. I'll do my sound check. Because also I do a show before a show every day.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to really learn to conserve your voice. And then you have to talk to people and sign merch afterwards. So
it's a lot.
It's a lot of being smiley and hugs. And, you know, all of that is part of my personality. And the thing is, I want to connect with people and I want to talk to them. But it is hard to, like... Yeah. You know what I realised? Especially when I first started supporting people and... People can be very reserved and you're like, oh, that person's not very nice. And it's like, actually, no, they've been on tour for 3 weeks and they don't care anymore because
they're tired.
Their energy has to go in that show every single day. They don't care about like having small talk. And it's actually like, as you were saying, like conserving your energy is really important. I'm not saying you should be not nice to people, but you have to find your moments to really make sure that you can give your most because you're at work and it's not a social time. And I think, I don't know, some people have a rock star lifestyle, but I've never been that kind of person. And I'm, you have to trust your body and you can't get ill. If you get ill.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. This is your instrument. And so do you have any physical practices? Like how do you, you know, I said about in the Nike campaign, you kind of like flow and like do yoga and move. Do you practice yoga? Do you run? Do you dance? Like how does movement impact you?
Yeah, I think the one thing that's hard is when you're a freelance person, your schedule changes all the time. So when I'm on tour, I find it really hard to have a exercise schedule that actually, because also you're just knackered most of the time. But when I'm at home, I do a lot of yoga. Yoga has been an important part of my life since I was maybe 18. I think I started going to classes on my own. It was probably the first class or thing I did on my own, because it feels weird to do things on your own sometimes. I think we think we have to do things with people all the time, and actually yoga is something that really clears my mind and makes me feel really strong and helps me slow down in a world that wants me to do a million things at a time all the time. And I have to really remind myself why it's important, because I think especially the way society is, it makes you feel like everything you do has to be productive. And the other day I was hoovering my room and I caught myself giving myself reasons for why I needed to hoover my room and not do work. And it's like, you just have to, Poppy. Just, but it's like,
it's gotta be. Yeah,
your mind's always running and it's kind of crazy. So I have to make time for it. And I also, I use the gym at Block and that's really changed my life in terms of classes. I do boxing and I do yoga and I try and do them as many times a week as I can when I can fit in an hour at different times. And they do different, boxing's a new thing for me. I actually started boxing when I was a kid and my dad took me out of the class because I was the only girl, which really still makes me very angry.
Yeah,
it's so annoying. Just make her learn not how to fight and defend us. Anyway, another generation. And starting that again has been really cool and it's really different. I think you can have different things. Like sport, with yoga, it's like strength and endurance and focusing on yourself and your breathing. And I think it's really good in terms of a politics of, I don't know how to explain it, but a politics of really understanding yourself and working out what you want to put into the world and what energy you want to have. And that's so important for doing anything. And then boxing is more like feeling strong and feeling powerful and pushing. I think as someone who's not like you must be more into like athletics and you must have like a competitive energy.
Yeah, I do.
I can see you're just like
pretty competitive.
So I don't have that.
Okay,
so that's why I like yoga, because it's like focusing on I'm competing with myself.
I have that too. Like I'm not that person that's like, everyone, I'm racing you, I'm beating you.
She's lying.
I'm
to
not
you.
That person.
She's lying to you, because I know as soon as you start running, you're on that race. I know people like you. Sports people. My best friend from school was like that. She's like super chill, like really nice. You get
into that like bleep test or whatever it was.
Oh yeah, switch.
And she would like just dash you out of the way.
Oh yeah, switch comes on for sure. Yeah. I have that in me, I'm not gonna lie. But I also definitely think I have it with myself too. It's yeah. a self-reflection thing of going like, what have you done? What can you do? And always kind of competing to be, yeah, to see if I can do better. But I think the mums at my son's school on sports day would disagree.
Oh my God.
4 years undefeated.
Dragon.
4 years undefeated, I'm just saying.
Oh my God.
Of course.
Just let someone else win, for God's sake. No.
Okay, this is another conversation about, we're going to have that conversation yeah. another day.
But I think that energy is important to have. Yeah. And sometimes I struggle with that. I think that's something that I really learn is that when someone puts pressure on me to be better, I'd pull back and I'm kind of scared. And boxing has really taught me to be like, no,
lean
push
in.
Yourself. Yeah. yeah. And it's that's an important lesson for life that you have to, you can't let other people stop you from doing, pushing that a little bit further. And sometimes other people's energy does do that, or you let other people go instead of you. And that's, it's again, that thing about giving up parts of yourself to other people or letting them take up space when you should also have that space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why
yeah. you always...
No, I'm joking. So with that practice and with the exercise, I want to know, I always ask on this show, on the Power Hour, I love to find out, you know, people's daily habits, their routine, their kind of journey, and in particular, what gets them out of bed, and in particular, what time. So
I want to know yours.
Well, I mean, mine's early. So everyone knows mine's early. I get up early, break that sweat, all of that.
Oh my God.
But I'd love to know what time you get up, Poppy, and what's the first hour of your day? What does it include?
So this is, again, another hard one because my life is very, there's no structure to it. So
if you have a choice. What would you
yeah, so naturally? If I have a choice, I mean, as a musician, it's hard to go to bed early because I work probably till 2 a.m. most nights, even if I'm not doing a show. So I try and get up every day at 8:30 a.m. because I hate not having the day, even if I go to bed late. But then equally, I need to feel actually rested. I need like 9 hours sleep.
Okay.
I'm such a sleeper. So it's really hard to find that balance. But usually I get up at 8:30, do a bit of, I've just recently bought weights and I'm starting to do like weight training, and that makes me feel good to do that in the morning and feel like I've done like some crunches, some squats, some, what do you call them?
Curls, bicep curls.
Yeah, bicep curls,
yeah,
there you go.
She's doing the action.
And then breakfast, I've made my own granola and I have like granola and almond milk or
nice.
Coconut milk. Food is really important to me. The main things, yeah, so like having that hour in the morning is not necessarily always in my morning. It's like sometimes if I have a whole lot of stuff on, I'll just have to like wake up and get out of the house. If I have a cool time to do a shoot or something, there is no time to do anything because I already have to be up at 7 and I'm a dragon in the morning. I'm a late person. So I have to wake up and seize the day, but I don't necessarily enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So that hour is kind of whenever I have an hour, and it's often like to cook properly. People are always surprised at how much like I go in with cooking.
Me
too.
I love to cook. Yeah.
Cook proper food and like be healthy and don't, for me, it's the only time, like yoga, that my mind really slows down. And I will often even forget to take my phone into the kitchen, which is amazing. I'm not even thinking about it. I'm just focused. It's like a goal that you could, it's a small goal that you can reach. And
it has a finish. You see the
has
end
a
product,
finish,
yeah.
And you can enjoy it. And I think that's important because often we're looking at these really long, distant goals. And actually, it's important to accomplish small things in order to give you the happiness and the encouragement that you need to accomplish big things. So I think food is definitely one of those things for me. So if whether it's breakfast or lunch or dinner, make sure you have
take
them.
Time for it. Yeah, no, yeah. I love that too. I really love that. And I think having something that, as you said, it's almost like steps. It's like step one, step two, step three, and the end result is there. Yeah, I think that's really cool.
Structure. So yeah, my morning is always different, but just having structure is important. I can't, especially if it's a day where, because I spend a lot of time writing at home, those kind of days are really hard for me because there's no structure in the day. And so I have to make a list probably before I go to bed about like what I'm, even if I'm writing in the list, like get up, have a shower, have breakfast, my morning has been structured, and then I can go into like reading for an hour and then writing, and then do you know what I mean, to make sure I get it all done.
Yeah, I think a lot of creatives and a lot of freelancers feel that, because they're like, oh, the dream is, well, the idea of the dream is that if you're a creative freelancer working at home, it's like, you know, I don't know, the sunbeam coming in on your coffee cup. And then they're like, no, no, the reality is, like, you don't have to get out of bed and no one would know. You don't have to, I don't know, even, yeah. You know, you can just kind of, you can lose half of the day and just be like, I haven't started.
And that makes you so angry. Oh my God, I hate when that's the hardest thing, I think, about being freelance. Mm. Oh, being creative is that you can't time your productivity into a certain amount of hours in the day. And I've had to really learn that, because the thing is, like, it's exciting being freelance. I think most people would like to work from home. It's like a idealistic luxury idea, yeah. But you also have to make money from it. So it's like, how do you use that time well to make money from it? And I think as a creative, especially as a singer, it's difficult, because the thing that might make me most money is the best song that I ever write. Mm. And that might take me 4 months to write. You know, you never know. I mean, it doesn't often take me that long to write a song. But sometimes, I don't know, the best songs I write will come when I really feel that there's something that happens and I just feel like writing, and then it pours out and I'll write the whole song in 20 minutes or something. But sometimes other songs that have equally been good and been powerful.
Yeah, there's no, it doesn't equate to the time.
Yeah, I might write 4 words in a day and I might struggle. I have this thing, and I live with housemates, and I'm always like the worst person. And when I do like a 3-day writing thing, sometimes I'll have 2 days of hating myself. Mm. Why can't I do it? Why am I not good enough? Have I ever written a good song? How did I even write that song? Because songs are all rubbish. Yeah, like, and you have that kind of self defeat, and then it'll come to me and I'll write a great song on the third day.
I've still got it.
Yeah, or a great chord structure or whatever it is. And that sometimes you just need that basis. Yeah. And from there you can work through it or do anything or write whichever parts you want to write.
Yeah.
But you have to give yourself the time to be truly creative. You can't box it into 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You would at a desk. It doesn't work like that. And you have to give yourself a break.
Mm. Yeah, give yourself a break for sure. I think I need, I'm loving this puppy. I'm like, this is going to be listening back to this and taking notes myself. So on that, could you give the listeners a power hour challenge? So when I ask the guests to give the listeners a challenge, it can be anything. So it could be in their power hour, it could be in the morning, but just anything really that they could take away this week that they could try.
Okay. I'm going to say this thing that actually my maths teacher from secondary school would tell us, and I thought it was really powerful and that we don't do it enough, and it's kind of positive affirmations. And I used to think it was ridiculous when he told us to do it, but he would tell us to he was this like kind of quirky Iranian older guy, and it was funny because I think he actually thought about the way that women see themselves, and he was super strict and kind of like, he was kind of that thing between like really strict but really caring at the same time. And he used to tell us to like look in the mirror and say, I'm wonderful, I'm beautiful, I'm intelligent. And it felt really stupid, and you're probably going to feel really stupid when you do it in the mirror, but actually it's not really about it's not about what you say and even believing it at that moment, but it's like the repetitive action of giving yourself positive affirmations about yourself. Like, say to yourself what you're good at. Before any exam I've ever done, I've always said to myself in the last few minutes, like, I can do this, I'm really good, I'm really clever, I've worked at this, I have all the ability. Like, it seems silly, but you have to trick yourself mm-hmm. into believing, and that's the beginning of believing in yourself. And I think for me that was like the beginning. I had to do that a lot because the world tells us many negative things about ourselves, and so you have to counteract it.
Yep.
And if people aren't going to give you compliments 24/7, you have to do it for yourself.
Yeah.
And
it really does work. You know, we hear about like placebo, you know, medicines and how they work. I think it's kind of the same thing, as you said. Sometimes people have to see something to believe it, but I'm like, believe it to see it.
Yeah.
Say the thing.
It's already happened.
Yeah.
My mum actually taught me that. It's already the two things were like, don't ever let fear stop you from doing anything. And if you're scared of it, you should probably do it, because it's probably pushing you out of your comfort zone, and that's why you're scared. So that probably means you should do it. And that's like one thing I really think has helped me in life in terms of like seizing opportunities. And when I see something or a person that I really want to meet and it's like, oh God, I can't go up to them, just go and do it. And you, because you'll hate yourself afterwards if you don't.
You missed it. Yeah.
Yeah, if you miss an opportunity, and I can never miss an opportunity. It's like, they're so precious opportunities. So it's like that. It's like, don't let fear stop you.
Yep.
And then believe in yourself through telling yourself that you have what it takes and that nothing can stop you, because that's going to be your mantra for life. You have to, because also it's also the energy that you put into the world. And if we all were happier with ourselves and we really loved who we were for what we are, imagine like the people in your life that struggle, they're toxic in themselves. They struggle with not being able to accept themselves as they are, and we're not all the same, and the world isn't equal. So it's like you have to find your happiness in those small things that make you who you are, mm-hmm. because you have to live with yourself all your life. And otherwise, because sometimes I think I'm going on a tangent, but sometimes I think we think happiness is this faraway goal that we will reach, and once we get there we'll be happy, mm-hmm. and actually happiness is really fleeting, and it and sadness is part of life, and you wouldn't understand happiness without sadness. It's important to have the yin and yang kind of thing. And so if we can find happiness in the small fleeting moments, then we'll live our whole lives happy, yeah. and we'll be passionate, and we'll be doing what we love. And that's why it's important to do what you love, because otherwise you can't feel that happiness in small moments. And then it's like a kind of, it all feeds into itself. Mm. So yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Before I ask you my final question, tell us where we can find you and your music online.
You can find me everywhere. I mean, just type Poppy Ajuda into Instagram, Twitter, yep. Google, wherever you want, YouTube, and Spotify, probably a good place to start.
Awesome. Yeah, over 500,000 streams on Spotify per month.
Do I?
Yes, you do. See, I got the facts.
Yeah.
Okay, so my closing question, which I ask to every single guest on this show, is all about time.
Mm-hmm.
I really do believe time is the most valuable thing we all have and the most valuable thing you can give to another person. So I'm so grateful that you gave us an hour. Thank you so much. So what is the most valuable thing that time has taught you?
What is the most valuable thing that time has taught me? That it's precious. That it's fleeting, that things are always changing, and so we have to value the time that we have and that we give. And it kind of works in many ways. It's like you value your own time, so really only do things that you really want to do, because also if you don't really want to be there or you don't really want to do it, you're going to give other people that negative energy as well, and then everyone is kind of feeding off negative energy. Do the things that you're passionate about and that you love, and you'll spend every day of your life happy. And it might be, and happiness isn't like elated endorphins all the time. Happiness is working really hard at something and feeling accomplished. Or like when I'm in the studio for 10 hours and I haven't left the room, I probably don't feel that happy, but I'm happy that I'm working towards something that I know will be amazing or will represent me or help other people. And it's like finding your happiness in those moments. I think it's what I said before, it's that I don't want to say don't waste time, but use time wisely.
Yeah,
use it make purposefully, it make it count. Yeah, for sure.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Poppy.
Thank you for having
me. loved it. And thank you so much for listening. You can rate and review on iTunes, all those good things. Please let us know if you are gonna try Poppy's challenge, and yeah, just let us know if you enjoyed listening to the show. Thanks again for listening. See ya.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.